1547 to 1558, 11 years. I think you need to know that month by month. And in your compendiums of usefulness, I've broken it down month by month. What's happening when the source was produced? How typical is it? How, and here's a good phrase, atypical, is it? How does all of this affect its utility? If you want another word for that, is usefulness. You should be trying to play around with those words when you're writing, yeah, in your exam. Okay. Origin is a really important one. We're on slide 8 now. Origin is a really important one. Location, religion, politics. Where is the source made and by whom? These will not be consistent. This will be probably more important when you're evaluating some of your sources than others. But it is a question you need to ask and have an answer to before you start writing. I've written here, do these inform the opinions being given? I think this is an area, if we're looking at slide 8 here, where it's very easy to make simple comment. Yeah, this is a Catholic view. Well, he's a supporter of the Queen. You'd expect him to say that. But it's slide 9 that really helps us. Purpose, and you could write the word next to it, provenance. Here's tip 6. Use the word provenance. But where you're using it, make sure, please, that what's written after it is not simple comment, is actually advanced analysis. Because if you're using the word provenance, you're saying to the examiner, here's my evaluation of the sources as I use them. So make sure you are evaluating them. What is the source? Why was the source produced? What is it trying to achieve? Don't get hung up on this. I don't want rote or generalised evaluation. But is there emotive language there? And is that helpful? Yeah? Okay? Between the context, the origin, and the purpose, you have to evaluate the provenance. And that provenance has got to be done for all four passages and judged in your conclusion. Now, for the purposes of the recording, I'm going to read this conclusion. Okay? And I think this is exactly what you should be aiming to do. So this is a model conclusion that was given to us by the exam board for the 2019 paper. And we're on slide 10. In conclusion, the sources generally do support the view that enclosure was the main cause of unrest in 1549, despite there being other reasons too. The sources that focus on enclosure, primarily sources C and A, do have weaker provenance judgment. Source D has slightly stronger provenance and source B the strongest. Well, that's really just assertion that there is some ranking in there. However, they all suggest that enclosure was a definite cause of unrest, if not the main cause. Therefore, considering the sources in their provenance, it's fair to say that collectively they support the view that enclosure was the main cause of unrest in 1549. The fact that many of the attacks from these rebellions were on the gentry, the landlords, and their enclosure suggests that their view has much validity. Now, if you just speed back and have a look, please, at slide number 4 again, you will see that that conclusion is focused on the question. It does evaluate all the sources using provenance and own knowledge, and it does reach a judgment. Isn't it interesting? I wrote slide 4 before I read that exam report. Yeah? Slide 10 is doing what slide 4 is suggesting. Okay, should we go on and have a look at slide 11 then, please? Now, slide 11 is some feedback that I have had from various conversations with examiners. When you're discussing the reliability of a source at a level standard, here's a good phrase. Does it have a vested interest or a political or religious bias? And that's where you're bringing in high order, specific, month specific even, knowledge. Is the source written so that the writer can protect their own interest? Be very careful with this next bullet point. Is it a second-hand report? This is something that can really lead to that simple comment trap, okay? So you can say, well, they won't know they weren't there. We can say that about virtually anything, yeah? You need to be much more sophisticated about that. Can you prove that they're relying on other people's information? Does the person have expertise? This is the idea of the ambassador, yeah? And the reputation. Is it designed to protect the author's reputation? Can you see, if you look at this striking yellow slide, you really need to be confident that you understand the mid-Tudor period to make informed comments on these types of things. This is what an A-grade student might be exploring at various stages. Okay, let's move on to slide 12. Slide 12 is simply the level 6 band. I'm going to read it and then show you where I put some things in red. Very good focus on the question throughout. Fully, the sources are fully evaluated using both detailed provenance and detailed and accurate knowledge. If you do not consider the provenance substantially of all four sources, it's very hard for you to get an A. I think it's probably impossible. There is balance. Balance in the amount of time you spend on the different sources. Balance between provenance and context. And there's a convincing and fully supported analysis. Because. If you get nothing else out of today, and I hope you will get a few things out of this, keep focusing on that word because. Slide 13 I'm going to move across from. This is the mark scheme, and we're going to go on then and have a look at slide 14. Slide 14 is how I would suggest you try to model your answer. I do want to make a point. I'm in favour of the zigzag, and I'm going to talk you through this. But the point I want to make to you is this. The exam board are very clear. They're looking for the quality of analysis, not the structure. So you could go source A, source B, source C, source D. I would strongly advise you don't do that. If you are going to go through, you do the sources that support the statement and then disagree with the statement. So you don't do the sources in order. But the examiner should be. This is both more sophisticated and leads to better cross-referencing, and it's actually faster because you're not tying it back to the question all the time because it's already done. So let me talk you through this. I think you need to spend 5 minutes in an introduction that sets out which sources support the statement and which sources don't. You need to prove this with short quotations and highlight, flash your argument, highlight where you are going to conclude. So your conclusion for the, I do apologise, your introductions for these source questions are going to be longer than the ones that you would do for your Elizabeth answers. Okay? Why do that when you're short of time? It reduces the chance of you making mistakes. If you just rush in, the chances are that you might find yourself changing your mind about a source as you're using it. And then you've got a problem, haven't you? That's how you don't finish papers. Okay? So, you've got two sources, say, that support the statement, two that disagree. It might be that you've got sources that can be used on both sides. That's fine as well. The way to do this is to start off by saying, this is what the source says, evaluate it for provenance, tie it to the question. I would lead with the provenance. If you've got sources together, lead with the stronger source and say the latter is supporting it or developing a different strand of the argument. In your conclusion, and then you do the same again, and then in your conclusion, again, you're into 5 minutes where you're discussing the provenance and directly answering the question. One thing that students seem to do quite a lot, they're so busy extending their brain power into this section here, i.e. evaluating the provenance, they don't tie the paragraphs back. Yeah? And that's the one skill that I would strongly advise you to make sure that you have got. Okay. We're going to have a look then at slide 15. How do you do it? So slide 15 is really, what do you do in your 10 minutes? Now, I've put the three stages of source evaluation here. There's one thing that needs to go first, okay? First thing you need to do is, you could write this down as tip 7, we'll call it tip 7, what is the position of the question? What is the position of the question? And you have to do that first, don't you? Then you are grouping these sources for and against. Don't worry about evaluating them. You're just working out, does this source go here or does this source go here? Okay? I would say this to you now, for when you walk out of your exam. It is possible that candidate A uses a source for, and candidate B uses a source against, and that they both get credit for that. That's not always the case. Some sources are, you know, very clearly only one side. But they can be. I say that certainly now, for that moment where you have that horrible conversation after the exam. Because basically I don't like seeing grown men cry. Okay? What you've then got to do is annotate each source. Read the information around it and annotate it for context, origin, and above all, purpose, provenance. And what you're asking yourself, and you can write this down as tip 8 if you want, what you're writing there is, what analysis am I making of this source? Context will be more important in some sources than others. How typical, look at the final one, how typical is the source? What would you challenge it with from your own knowledge? One of the things that you see in students who end up getting C's rather than A's is you see much more emphasis on using context to evaluate and much less focus on provenance. Okay? Lead with provenance, develop with context. That would be my strong advice to you. Can we go on to slide 16 then? So, that's really all I wanted to say in those first 15 slides on the skills of the source evaluation paper. Do it first. I have had kids say to me, look, I'm much more confident with Elizabeth than the mid-tutors. Can I do the Elizabeth essay first? Well, you can. But it's 30 marks. It's 60% of this paper. It would seem to me best to do that first. If you look at it in absolutely phrase, then yeah, go to Elizabeth and come back to it, sure. But